Live from Las Vegas, Nevada, at the KSHP studios, this is the Michelle Mortensen Show with your host, Michelle Mortensen, the fresh and fearless voice of talk radio, taking on the liberal media, the political hacks, and so much more. It's time to nix the narrative and get to the truth the way only Michelle can. Now, here's your host, the fresh, fiery, and factual voice of politics and news, eight-time Emmy winner, Michelle Mortensen.
Well, hello, 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 and happy Monday to each and every single one of you on this very cold and wet and, dare I say, a little snowy Monday here in the Las Vegas Valley. If you haven't heard, there is snowfall in parts of the valley. In fact, the I-15 right at Prim to Baker has kind of been shut down. Red Rock Scenic Drive has been closed. And yes, if you go on Facebook or Twitter and Instagram, you'll see a bunch of people saying, look, look, there's some snowflakes, and you can't see them because they're gone just that fast. But hey, this is called winter in Las Vegas. It's crazy. And it was like 75 last week. So I don't understand anything that's going on here. I also don't understand what in Helsinki, Finland is going on with COVID and the great state of California. Oh yeah, we're going to talk about all of it, what the Biden administration has said, what Biden has said it himself, and of course, the about face that Governor Gavin Newsom has been doing all freaking weekend, really the icing on the cake with it today. Because as you know, up until today, California has been under one of the harshest lockdowns in the country. Super harsh. Everything was shut down. Everything was closed. Everything was, we need to follow the science. You can't eat dinner. You can't be in a restaurant. You can't do this. Oh, Hollywood, you can do whatever you want. Gavin Newsom can go in highfalutin French Laundry restaurant. All the rules for thee, but not for me, have been going on in the great state of California. And now, out of nowhere, California says, yeah, we're going to lift those lockdowns. This, despite no significant improvement in the state's overwhelmed ICUs. This, where remember the stay-at-home order that Gavin Newsom put in place said that it would only be lifted once the region's ICU capacities meet or exceed 15%. Yet right now, in the San Joaquin Valley and other places, they're nowhere near that. So what happened that today, all of a sudden, California, which still has the highest number of cases of COVID of anywhere in the country, just said, oh, now we can open. Now it's just fine. Now there's no problem. Michigan pulled the same stunt. Governor Gretchen Whitmer over on Friday said, you know what? I think I'm going to lift all those lockdowns. Restaurants, you can now dine just 25% capacity. What is going on? What happened to science? Weren't we supposed to follow the data? Oh, get this. California is not even releasing the data any longer. No, they're not releasing the data because they say, you know what? It might confuse you. It might be misunderstood. It might be hard for you to understand. You know, we don't want to make it complicated for you because see, this is what's really going on. They don't want you to know the truth. They want you to just eat up whatever they tell you and say that it's the honest to God fact. They don't want you to question anything. They want to say, listen to me. I'm a politician. I know better and I know what's best for all of you. Yet that's what they're saying. The state of California said we rely on very complex measurements and we don't want to confuse anyone because it's really hard for people to understand. See, the state of California thinks you're dumb. And you are dumb. You want to know why? Because you fell for this hook, line, and sinker. You fell for, you have to follow the science, even though none of the science backs up the school closures, the restaurant closures, none of it. You're now all seeing you've been had. And for a long time, Republican commentators were saying, you know, after this election, COVID's going to miraculously go away. And there's Democratic commentators who go, that's not true. I mean, Biden won a long time ago when no one's really done anything until right now. let me just clear that muddy water for you. Biden hasn't even been president for a week. And since then, Cuomo's changed his tune. Can't stay locked down. Gavin Newsom changed his tune. Ah, Governor Whitmer changed her tune. Y'all got had. Y'all got punked. Y'all let these politicians use you as political pawns in political theater to destroy our economy, to destroy your livelihood, to get their freaking political agendas passed. You've been so had that even Joe Biden, who from about June on, when he was just a candidate, said, I have a plan. I have a plan. I have a plan to fix COVID. That Donald Trump doesn't know what he's doing, but I have a plan and I'm going to make it so much better. Do you want to know what he said on day one on the job? Let's roll the tape.
If we fail to act, there will be a wave of evictions and foreclosures in the coming months as this pandemic rages on, because there's nothing we can do to change the trajectory of the pandemic in the next several months.
There's nothing we can do? What? Like, wait a minute. I thought you had a plan. And now your plan is there's really nothing we can do. I don't really know. We can do anything. And then you have Biden's Health and Human Services Secretary on State of the Union on CNN this weekend, trying to clear up the big old hole that Biden just dug himself into. And before we're going to watch it, I want you to notice one thing that people always do when they're on a TV show. Instead of Becerra just answering the question, he goes, oh, Dana, I just want to thank you so much or congratulate you on your new post here at State of the Union. See, they dodge and then they try to go for it. It's a crap answer. Take a listen.
Do you agree with President Biden that there's nothing you can do to change the trajectory of the pandemic in the next several months?
Well, Dana, first, thanks for having me and congratulations to you,
on
your new post. What I believe President Biden is making very clear. The plane is in a nosedive and we got to pull it up, and you're not going to do that overnight, but we're going to pull it up. We have to pull it up. Failure is not an option here. And so we will. And the president has put forward not just a plan. It's a rescue plan that should be followed by a recovery plan. But first, you got to rescue the people. You got to rescue the economy. And that's why the president has put forward a bold plan with specifics. And he's going to bring everyone into the game.
God, this administration is all doom and gloom. No, what he meant to say is we're like a plane in a nosedive. Oh, so you think we're crashing? You think we're a plane that is crashing into the ground? That's where you think America is right now? Okay. And we got to have a plan, you know, some sort of recovery plan to get ourselves out of this. Huh. Interesting. And no one has thought that maybe that recovery plan is reopening. I mean, even Newsom, who's on his way to maybe getting recalled, and Cuomo and Whitmer are like, yeah, nah, we won. Time to reopen. I mean, and it gets worse. Becerra went on in that very same interview to basically say, hey, this isn't going to happen overnight, but man, if we mask up, it's going to be all better. Listen.
So I take that to mean you do think that you can change the trajectory of the pandemic in the next several months. And if so, what time frame are we talking about?
Well, that's where President Biden made it very clear. It won't happen overnight. We can do better. We can not only control COVID, but get us back to real normality. But it takes everybody, all hands on deck. We've got to make sure we're coordinating and we are talking to people. We can't just tell the states, here's some PPE, some masks, here's some vaccines, now go do it. No. When we hand them over, we stay with them and provide resources to make it happen. We do that, Dana. If we get people following the president's guidance of wearing a mask for these first 100 days, we're going to get control of this thing.
That was some perplexing BS that just came out of his mouth. Like, we can't just go give states some PPE. We got to stay there and hold their hand. And I swear, people just wear masks for 100 days. We're going to beat this thing. Shut the freaking front door. Number one, wearing masks for 100 days isn't going to make this magically go away. Like, oh my God, if I just wear a mask for 100 days, we're going to get totally back to normal. I can go to Disneyland. I can go out to dinner and I can get my hair done. No, no, no. The only way we go back to normal is, this is going to shock you. I know it's revelatory. I should probably be president one day because I'm going to blow your mind with this here. You get back to normal by getting back to normal, which means reopening. There ain't no recovery package. There ain't no thing in Congress anybody can do that's going to change jack diddly do of where we are right now. There is only one solution, and that solution is bam, opening up. So much so that even Cuomo and Newsom and Whitmer, they all know it. Because if we don't open up, they don't make money. And they're already seeing they're getting their freaking bailout. Because one of the executive orders that Biden did sign in his freaking 5 days in office was one that basically said, we're going to pay back San Francisco and California and places for their homeless and what they had to do for the homeless. And of course, California in its brilliance had this brilliant idea to just throw all their homeless people into hotels. And so those hotels are going to get bailed out. But you want to know what hotels aren't going to get bailed out? Oh, that'd be all the ones here in Las Vegas where we really need a bailout because we didn't put homeless people up in the Venetian. Now, did we? No. No, no, we didn't. Now, that's not going to stop the Democrats insisting and trying to tell you that what the American people right now need is a recovery package and that the Senate and the Congress must come together to give you a recovery package, you know, a check, because that one-time $2,000 check is going to change everything. It's going to change everything. All of a sudden, you're going to be able to pay your rent, go on vacations, take care of your kids with that $2,000 one-time stimulus check. And according to Bernie Sanders, they're going to do it through a process that the Republicans use all the time. Take a listen.
Now, as you know, reconciliation, which is a Senate rule, was used by the Republicans under Trump to pass massive tax breaks for the rich and large corporations. It was used as an attempt to repeal the Affordable Care Act. And what we are saying is, you use it for that, that's fine. We're going to use reconciliation, that is 50 votes in the Senate plus the vice president, to pass legislation desperately needed by working families in this country right now. You did it. We're going to do it. But we're going to do it to protect ordinary people, not just the rich and the powerful.
That was a really important soundbite. Not only did it explain to you what reconciliation is, it's basically getting the 51 votes that the Senate has on the Democrat side to get what they want done. But Bernie Sanders threw it right back at all the Republicans and said, see, you tried to do it too. You did it for tax cuts. You tried to do it to overturn Obamacare. Now we're just going to do it. Ah, this is something I really need everyone to just get in their heads because it's so important. Democrats, quite honestly, do a lot of things better than Republicans. No, not the actual packages, but actually using the system to get what they want done, whether it's good or bad for America. Remember how they passed Obamacare? No one had even read it. Nobody even knew what the bill entitled. The biggest lie you were told was, like your doctor, keep your doctor. You don't have to get rid of it. And yet we all had to get rid of our doctor. But they all came together and they passed it. See, Republicans try to do something, but let's go back to 2017 when we had a Republican White House, a Republican House, and a Republican Senate, and they couldn't get jack diddly squat done the entire time until the end of the month of December when they passed one thing, tax reform. They couldn't get their act together. Democrats always seem to get their act together because what Democrats do is they say, we're just going to join forces and sing kumbaya and we'll get it all done. And who cares who we screw over? But here's the problem. They're going to use exactly what they did. They're just going to do it better. And they're going to destroy this country because what they want you to believe is that if we give you enough stimulus checks, everything's going to be okay. The government can take care of you. Do you want the government taking care of you? Do you want the government paying your bills? Do you want the government making sure you've got a house? Because let me tell you what happens when the government is in control of everything. You have no say. Not a one. Bernie said a whole lot more. Check this out.
You want it done before the impeachment trial starts?
We got to do everything. I mean, this is not, you don't have the time to sit around, you know, weeks on impeachment and not get vaccines into the arms of people. You don't have time to worry about vaccines and not deal with the fact that children in America are going hungry. We got to break through this old approach that the Senate takes years and years to do anything. We got a crisis right now. We can chew bubble gum and walk at the same time. The American people are hurting. And they want us to act. That's what our candidates ran for in this election. That's what the guys in Georgia won on. And we have got to reaffirm the faith of the American people in government that we can respond to their pain.
Well, that was very interesting. So evidently, according to Bernie Sanders, the Senate can chew bubble gum and walk at the same time. I question if that's true, because quite honestly, what has the Senate or Congress done really at all over the, let's just say, the last 20 years? Have they ever gotten immigration reform? No. Other than Obamacare, have they ever reformed the problems in healthcare that we have? And didn't Obamacare just create a whole bunch more problems? Yeah. So what have they done? And they are going to waste time on an impeachment. Why am I calling it an impeachment? A waste of time? I'm not even going to go down whether it's constitutionally acceptable or not. But here's just the mirror. Like, I don't know, facts. You need 17 Republicans to say, I'm going to impeach the president for this to stand. And you don't have 17 Republicans in the Senate. You're not going to have 17 Republicans in the Senate. You're going to have Mitt Romney. You're going to have Susan Collins. You're going to have Murkowski. You're going to maybe have Ben. You don't have 17. It's a big fat waste of time. But you know what? I mean, I think Chuck Schumer said it best. It's all about the erection.
There will be a trial, and when that trial ends, senators will have to decide if they believe Donald John Trump incited the insurrection against the United States.
That's my favorite moment ever, and his little smirk when he realized what he said just kills me. But this, man, they're going to need a lot of blue pills to get this one to stand up. Because it ain't going to work. But they're going to waste time starting February 8th with a sham impeachment that they can't get done so they can say that they can walk and chew gum at the same time, and we're going to get you stimulus, and we're going to write you a check, and it's just going to be yay. No, none of it's yay. All of it's stupid. There is one way to get America back. Do you want to know what it is? It's called opening up. It's not that freaking hard. It's not that hard. It's very, very simple. But see, Democrats and the media want you to be confused as to what's left, what's right, what's up, what's down. I mean, for example, Biden's first day in office, he got rid of the Muslim travel ban. And then 2 days later, he instituted a COVID ban that basically blocks people from traveling here from Europe, Africa, and South America. So Biden literally said, hey, Muslims, come on over. Everybody else, super not welcome. Meanwhile, he's opening up the border for anyone to sneak on in through. And none of his plans are xenophobic because, you know, oh, blocking Africans and Europeans and South Americans, that's not a problem. How is no one questioning this? It really is baffling and perplexing to me. Here's the only thing I know for certain. Joe Biden on the campaign trail made you a lot of promises. And you know what? He hasn't kept one of them. He's talking out of both sides out of his mouth. And that is not a good sign on your first week of ruling like a king dictator with your executive orders. Now, we got a lot more Michelle Mortensen show to come up. We do have to take a quick commercial break. We're going to go right into it with a little bit of cheat codes, no promises, because basically Biden's not giving us any promises. He's just breaking them one by one. We'll be right back.
Promise me no promises. Promise me. Oh, nah, nah. Just be careful, nah, nah. Love ain't simple, nah, nah. Promise me no promises. Yeah.
Hey, did we do that termite inspection?
That discount agent said we didn't need to.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds. I've recently learned that Big Wireless spends a lot on political lobbying. Like, a lot. I had no idea that wireless owners were supposed to do that. So Mint Mobile is officially contributing to the mayor of Idlewild, California.
A good, good boy named Max. Yes, he is.
We won't be contributing nearly as much because, frankly, we prefer to invest our money in stuff for you, which is why I'm announcing free data upgrades on every plan beginning January 28th.
Who's in the pocket of big business? Who's in the pocket of big business?
Mint Mobile. Now, with more bite.
feel like a woman.
Whatever really happened to Shania Twain? She hasn't really been on the scene in quite some time. But yeah, there's a lot of big news in the world of transgenders and how they're treated here in America, according to two executive orders that have been written by and signed by Joe Biden. The first one today really had to do with transgenders in the military. Basically, Biden's executive order overturned that and allowed transgenders to serve in the military. Now, I, for one, when I ran for Congress, I was very clear about this. I don't have a problem with transgenders serving in the military. I don't have a problem with any American serving in the military if they want to, if they're able to. That's not the issue. But I think we need to go back in time and remember what was really at stake here back in 2017 when Trump first issued that ban. It doesn't really have anything to do with whether they can or should serve. It has a lot to do with who is paying for the medical procedures of those who are transgendered who want to go through that actual transition. Because, of course, in order to go through that transition and to defy all science and all biology and to become a gender that you are scientifically not, you have to have a series of surgeries and procedures. And what was really at stake here was whether the government would pay for those transitions or not. A lot of confusion also about the transgender executive order that was passed on Biden's first day and what that meant for transgendered kids when it came to sports. Now, I don't claim to be the expert on this issue in any way, shape, or form. But from what my research has found, this really was about Title IX and I believe Title VII and how they are protected. And it really didn't say anything specifically about what it means for transgender children who are in high school and what it would mean for them to be on athletic teams. Now, regardless of that, of course, the backlash was seen immediately where people said, hey, this is taking huge steps back for women and for our girls when it comes to sports. What was interesting through a little bit of research that we did was that on the collegiate level and on the Olympic level, they already have guidelines in place for people who consider themselves transgender. There are certain requirements that you've lived as a certain gender for a certain period of time, that you have certain testosterone levels before you can compete in Olympic or collegiate sports. So I don't know if it was a fair stretch that we went immediately to, oh, this is going to hurt our kids in high school sports. It looks like 16 states in America do have laws or are working on laws on the book to address transgender children when it comes to high school sports. This is obviously a case that's going to get a lot bigger and a lot nastier in the weeks to come, as I'm sure this is going to end up before the Supreme Court at some point. It does beg the question, how in this new world that we've lived in, where we literally defy science, we literally defy biology, we literally defy all of that. On one hand, we say we're all for women's rights. On one side, we say we want to empower women. And on the other, we want to take it away from them every chance we get. We are going to have to come to terms with some very, very tough questions and battles here in the years to come. I'm not saying I have all the answers. Nothing breaks my heart more than a child who is struggling with their identity, who is being hurt and bullied and treated poorly. No one should want that. As a mom, no mom should ever want that for their child. But at the same time, we don't want things to be woefully unfair. We don't want things to be woefully twisted. We don't want to say that you can believe this science, but you can't believe that science. We're going to have to start manning up, for lack of a better term, and start finding what we really believe and start coming to an even playing field where people are treated equally and fairly. Because after all, that's what the Declaration of Independence was all about, that all men would be treated equally. Equally. Equally means one person isn't better than the other, but it also means that not one person is given more rights or more opportunity than the other. It's an equal playing field. And this is a real slippery slope. It's real scary. It's real confusing. And right now there's total confusion on what was happening with these two executive orders. So I'm going to encourage everyone to become more informed on this issue so that we make the right fights instead of making Twitter fights, because there's nothing cool about making a tweet that might go a little viral. Nothing cool about it at all. It doesn't change a dang thing. If you want real change, you have to know what's really going on, and we have to come up with eloquent arguments to fight, fight, fight. Now, speaking of schools, here in the great state of Nevada, I am just ashamed and grossly so sad that over the weekend, the New York Times came out with an article that basically said, over here in Clark County, we're reopening schools because of the number of suicides that our students have suffered from. Why am I so irritated about this article in the New York Times? Number one, because our local media has been woefully silent about it. In fact, our local media up and down the great state of Nevada has denied that suicides have been up in our kids due to the school closures. Yet the New York Times can report on it. And well, yes, darn it, must be fact because it came from the New York Times. But Channel 8, Channel 5, all the stations up in Reno, they've all denied it. And it claims that we're reopening, that Dr. Jara said, when we started to see the uptick in children taking their lives, we knew it just wasn't COVID numbers. We need to look at anymore. We have to find a way to put our hands on our kids, to see them, to look at them. They've got to start seeing some movement, some hope. So we're acting like reopening kindergarten through third grade here eventually. Well, God, that's going to solve everything. We did what we could. No, you haven't. What's happened here in Nevada is disgusting because we've allowed the teachers' union to demand that the schools stay open even though there is no science, not one ounce of science that says it's dangerous. And I'm going to raise my hand high and say I am living freaking proof that everything they've said is a lie because my children who go to private school have been in school since June and my children have not suffered from one COVID case in any of their classrooms. How about them apples? You've been lied to. You've been played. And we aren't even fully reopening our schools. There is no plan to even fully reopen our schools within this school year. So we obviously here in Nevada and in other places all around the country seem to think it's okay for kids to not go to school for more than a year. Because, man, there's a scary virus out there and someone might get it. We think it's totally okay for these kids not to get the meals they need, not to get the counseling they need, not to have the friends that they need, not to have the social interaction they need, not to have the sports that they need, not to have the freaking education that they need. That's all okay. Because there was this scary virus and we made it super political. And you know, we had to use that to win elections. So that made it all okay. That's how dumb everyone sounds on this topic. Because not one person, not our governor, not the school district, not the teachers' union, gave a rat's butt. I've edited that about what's happening to your children. They don't care. They don't care that your kindergartners aren't learning to read. They don't care that your third graders aren't learning multiplication. They don't care that your high schoolers are missing vital, vital, vital years for them to go to college. They don't care. They care that the teachers' union says the teachers are safe. And get this, most of the teachers want to go back to the classroom. It's just the teachers' union and its demands for more money, how it wants to up our sales tax, up the gaming tax, do whatever they can to fill their coffers. And remember, don't ever forget this because it's really important. Here in the great state of Nevada, every time the teachers' union has won a battle, whether it's getting teachers more pay or something else, do you want to know what the teachers' union has done? It's raised its dues on the teachers. So those teachers who get that great pay raise, they lose every single dime of it right away so that they can pay higher dues to the teachers' union. Yeah, makes perfect sense. I want to remind everyone, too, that every single politician in this state, Republican or Democrat, they've all run. And we need to teach kids. We need school choice. We need to make sure that our kids are getting the best. We need to pay teachers what they're worth. We need to, yeah. And yet, for the last decade, Nevada has remained dead last in education. That's right. Mississippi beats us. Alabama beats us. West Virginia beats us. Arkansas beats us. They all beat us. We're the worst. So what have those politicians done? That's an interesting question, isn't it? Here's the answer. They haven't done anything. And I want to remind you of that. That every politician, the ones you love, the ones you hate, the ones who are on the right, the ones who are on the left, they've made sure that Nevada's always at the bottom. At education, with healthcare, my God, we're even at the bottom when it comes to vaccine distribution. That's right. We're the worst state in the union for that one, too. So remind me again, how effective all our politicians have been here in the state of Nevada. Something to think about as we enter our biennium legislative session here February 1st, which will only go until about June 3rd, and then they won't meet again until 2023. Just remember that for just just a second, hot minute there. Okay. I also want you to think that most of these politicians, just think about this for a minute. They've been there for at least 10 years. I mean, how long has Governor Sisolak been a politician? Oh my God. And what has he done? There you go. You got laying some huge, sad truth bombs on you here. But all those politicians who you think because they're Republicans or they're Democrats are going to get something done for you. Let me just tell you, here in the great state of Nevada, they haven't done jack for you. And it's about time that you quit forgetting that. And we start bringing in some new blood. Bringing in new blood and reinventing the GOP is what we're going to be talking about with my guest up next after this quick commercial break. He has written a book about how we kind of attract millennials to the GOP. And we're going to talk about the future of the grand old party, if there even is one, right after the break. So don't move a muscle. We've got much more to come. I can't cope with that.
How about new?
No.
No way.
Come on. No.
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 No. No. No.
Only Discover has no annual fee on any card.
Bye. Drive safe.
What will we do with our son gone off to college?
What you'll do is claim a tuition tax credit for him, which I can help file.
Right here. Come on, look.
If you're a photographer, these props can be deducted.
Can I write up the Wi-Fi in my son's treehouse?
If that's where you get your freelancing done, then yep.
Thank you!
File with the help of an expert, or let an expert file for you. Intuit TurboTax Live.
When you're up for it, you know where to find us.
Can't hide, gonna find you and take it slowly, ready or not.
Ready or not, we need to make some changes in the grand old party, the GOP. And I think we gotta stop electing people like this guy.
How do you do, fellow kids?
I love that clip from 30 Rock with Steve Buscemi where he's trying to act like an undercover officer. Steve Buscemi, who's like probably 60 years old, saying, "What up, fellow kids? Yeah, I'm hip. I'm cool." And that pretty much describes, I don't know, every single Republican. Old white man who's super not cool and super not relevant. But yet we're going to hope that they're going to just change everything. We keep going down the same old road. That's my opinion. I wonder if that's also the opinion of my next guest. His name is Jonathan Jakubowski. I hope I said that correctly. He's the author of Bellwether Blues, A Conservative Awakening of the Millennial Soul. He's also the founder of Champions in Action, and he is my guest to talk about this and so much more. John, thanks so much for joining us. I hope I didn't butcher that last name too badly.
Hey, Michelle, it's Jakubowski, but you were pretty close, so it counts.
All right. Good. Yay me. I was close enough. That's the one time we're being close enough is okay. Well, I'm curious with the book that you wrote and everything, what your take is on this, because I think there is a group of us. When I interviewed Senator Marsha Blackburn recently, even she said, you know, this whole idea of the grand old party being old, it's outdated and it's wrong. There's nothing fresh, nothing nothing relevant about this. And there's quite a few of us who feel that the Republican Party needs to make a bit of a shift in who's representing us and what we look like. And I'm wondering what you discovered in your book as you looked directly at what millennials are looking for.
Yeah, first of all, let me define a millennial for you, Michelle. I think I had this assumption going into writing the book and then found out millennials aren't the kids on college campuses anymore. Millennials are now aged between 25 and 40 years of age. So they're now in their child-rearing years. They're kind of working depending upon where they're at. In the coast or in mainland America, there's differences in terms of their values and their historicity, which obviously informs their voting values. The one thing I would say, Michelle, as I listened to your earlier segment, many millennials share your frustration. They're frustrated, they're skeptical, they're disillusioned. They see that the political process is not working. It's not functioning the way that it should. And that places them in this really interesting place where they're leaving the left because they see how far left of center the left has gone, but they're not embracing conservatism or the GOP. They're in the middle. And that's where I really got deep into the investigation about whether blues understand how can conservatives be more effective at reaching that generation.
Okay. So my question is then, how can they be more effective? Because I think it's fairly clear we haven't been terribly effective.
Well, the good news for conservatives is they're winnable, not easily. But what I found through the research of seven millennials in swing state America, actually, I went deeper than swing states. I went into the swing counties. My county, Wood County, is one of 58 counties throughout the nation that is considered bellwether, having voted for the president in each of the previous elections since the year 2000. So I went into the swing county context, and I discovered millennials who changed their voting habits from voting for Barack Obama to voting for Donald Trump. And what led to that transformation wasn't rocket science. It wasn't upping ourselves with our technological game, although that matters, having better campaigns, having a hip message. No, it was really a deep relationship that led to an awakening. It led to a recognition that when I go to the ballot box, I'm not voting for the charisma or the personality or the speaking ability of the individual. I'm voting for the principles they represent, policies that will impact my life. And all seven of these millennials had different reasons for the way they changed their votes. And what I found is conservatives are kind of adopting this pragmatic approach that's very short, nearsighted, and very short term. Kind of faking like we're the hip and cool party, to use the analogy you just used earlier, thinking that it's all of those items that are going to make a difference. No, what we need to do is go back to the principles that create the greatest lasting and most effective impacts on our lives and on the lives of future generations. And the Constitution really embodies that. We just have to communicate that more effectively through personal relationship.
I think what's interesting about that, though, is when you look at Donald Trump, I don't think anyone would necessarily refer to him as hip, young, or cool. None of those. Was he a celebrity? Was he culturally relevant? Absolutely. Just as is AOC, someone who I find immensely dangerous and immensely powerful over on the opposite end of the spectrum there. The problem, though, is I think the Republican Party has ultimately lost its identity, because Trump's Republican is far different than the fiscal conservative Rand Paul Republican. So what ideas are the Republican Party supposed to be identifying themselves with in order to be a party that is focused on freedom, a lack of censorship, and God, dare I say it, fiscal responsibility, which is not hip, cool, or millennial related whatsoever?
Well, there's nothing that unites you more than a common enemy. And what's happening in America today, as the cultural institutions of society are dominated by the left, and now that has been established in our government, we've already seen the litany of executive orders representing that liberal worldview, that far left worldview. And what the conservatives have to do, what the Republicans have to do, is they have to use principles, not focus on people, personalities, or politicians. It's principles that are going to make the lasting difference. You mentioned one of those. There's two things that stood out in the research of millennials that they really embrace. One of those is freedom. Believe it or not, millennials aren't all sold out for the idea of being under a totalitarian government, the version of 1984 and George Orwell. That's not something that they necessarily embrace. And I think throughout this pandemic, many millennials have experienced what it's like to have these shutdowns and lockdowns and having children in school without being able to go there. That was really distasteful, and their recognition of freedom grew from that. The second thing they value is compassion. And it's one of the things that I think maybe something we could celebrate about the millennials. A lot of millennials have really taken on lower paying jobs because they're a cause related generation in many ways. And we're obviously speaking in generalities here. But as I look at millennials in mainland America, which make the difference in electoral politics when voting for the president. These millennials, even though they say they support socialism, it's because they don't know what socialism is. I think there was a poll from Gallup that said a majority of millennials accept socialism as an idea moving forward. If they understood what socialism is, and as millennials come to understand what free enterprise looks like, they change their minds on that subject matter. They really have a bleeding heart for the least, the last, and the lost. And as a result of that, I think they're for policies that are going to lift up those that are at the bottom of the economic pyramid, recognizing that the policies that have been promoted by the left create a long-term generational dependency upon welfare, which leads to endemic poverty that lasts for multiple generations. That's the message we have to talk about: free enterprise and freedom.
And I agree with all of that. Where I have struggled with how the Republican Party does this is in this. Let's take Biden's executive order about dealing with the homelessness situation that he signed and what that means for San Francisco. San Francisco, which has one of the worst, fastest growing homeless populations in the country. I believe it has the worst. Part of the reason why it has the worst, and you're talking to a girl who was born and raised in San Francisco, is because of the skyrocketing prices of real estate there, how much money it takes to get a job because of the taxes, because of the problems that they have there. But see, that never gets addressed. Biden gets to say, well, let's bail out San Francisco. Let's bail out all those hotels that house very expensive hotels like the Four Seasons that house homeless people. And then Democrats and the liberal left say, see, this is what we're doing. We're taking care of the homeless. That's what you should do. That's what you should want to do. The message gets so twisted that paying hotel bills means you're taking care of the homeless, but getting people actual jobs and working again is mean or awful or rude. And this generation gets most of its news from freaking Instagram and Facebook. So we must start changing the way we're talking about issues. And I don't see anyone talking about that. And I don't see anyone on the right who's done it well.
Michelle, you're absolutely right. And when I talk to these millennials in mainland America, it's one of the things that really made them change their opinion was a mentor, somebody who stepped into their life to help them understand that these policies have an effect that's long term. And when we talk about the effect long term, let's talk about it from the vantage point of the single mom in the inner city who's been crushed by a dependency upon welfare, who finally gets the job, becomes an assistant manager, then a manager, then breaks through the cycle of dependency and is able to give her kids a 401k plan that allows them to have lasting wealth and resources. This is where the GOP needs to go. We need to focus on the small businesses and on the individuals in society who flourish as a result of economic prosperity. And we're going to have tremendous opportunity in the next 4 years. We're going to see some major economic damage being done to individuals throughout the country who cannot run their small businesses the way that we had it back in 2017 through 2019, when tax reform led to all of this infusion of investment, when economic opportunity zones in inner cities were leading to flourishing and the rising of wages and opportunities for all sorts of Americans of minority classes. And we saw the votes that happened in Florida with the Cubans and the Venezuelans. Individuals that came from those countries that really represent what socialism looks like, they knew that they couldn't vote for that. And that's why many of them voted for Trump. I mean, what happened in Miami-Dade County was really a modern day miracle, a flip of like 39% that was largely tied to the Latino vote because they saw what those policies do. And we must communicate more effectively from that vantage point. And when we do, those principles, I think, will resonate and will form and create a new formation of a GOP that reaches out to this multi-ethnic working class vote that can last, I think, beyond one single election cycle.
And I hope you're right about that. I just hope that the GOP is able to stop taking one step forward and then immediately taking two steps back. Because I agree with you. What we saw in Florida was phenomenal and it should be, you know, applauded and looked at. But unfortunately, we went from the victories in Florida to the whole stop the steal. Let's make this all about election fraud for 2 months. And then, of course, the events that happened on January 6th. And because we live in a world of unjust media, what happened on January 6th, rightly so, was massively condemned. But the anarchy that happened in Tacoma, Washington over the weekend, where they are going onto federal buildings, trying to get all inmates released. They're burning things down. They're doing whatever they want. That is still not condemned and praised. We just lose the battle over and over and over again because we always go for the, oh, shiny little thing. Let's focus on that shiny little thing. That's drawn my attention instead of staying the course. And it drives me nuts. And I'm going to preach about it forever and ever. I do want to give people a chance to learn a little bit about where they can get your book. And if you wouldn't mind, give us a quick plug of Champions in Action, because I actually think that's pretty darn cool what you're doing there.
Oh, thanks, Michelle. Yeah, so you can find the book wherever books are sold. It's on Amazon, which is where most people go. It's on Audible, so you can listen to it, or you can read it off of Kindle. You can also go to our website at bellwetherbluesbook.com. We have the videos of the seven stories of millennials that changed their voting patterns. One of those stories is Jose Mendez, and Jose happens to now be my brother-in-law, but he came from Guatemala, and that's where I established this nonprofit called Champions in Action. I was a missionary there in high school, and then I returned 10 years later to establish a nonprofit that works with at-risk youth aged between 11 and 15 years of age who are fatherless, in situations of poverty, at risk to being involved in gangs, in drugs, in violence, and who really need a mentor. So it's a mentorship program that's gospel-centric. And through soccer and mentorship, we've seen thousands of kids and seen their lives transformed and seen opportunities for them that they wouldn't otherwise have.
I love that. That's so amazing. So definitely go check those out. Two great worthwhile or great worthwhile cause and a very interesting book that I think everyone needs to focus on a lot more because you were exactly right. Millennials are not Gen Z. Gen Z are the kids who are in high school. Gen Z are the kids who are in college right now. We're talking about, you know, 35-year-olds, boring 40-year-olds. That's who we need to win back slowly but surely, and hopefully we can. Jonathan, I hope to have you on the show again. Thanks so much for joining us.
I would love that, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
All right. Have a great day. All right. There is still so much more to talk about. As you know, one of my favorite things to bring to you every single week is the news that you missed, the freak shows that are out there that we just have to absolutely talk about, and all of the stupidity that is Twitter. And I tell you this, this weekend gave us mountains and mountains and mountains of topics. In the next block, we got Bigfoot. We got Bridgerton, we got Yuri, the man who married his sex doll, and so much more. Don't go anywhere. It's going to be a good one.
Don't go. Can't stop now, don't you know?
Yeah, no problem.
Yes, a thousand times yes.
Discover. Accepted at 99% of places in the U.S.
What exactly are you insinuating? You think that I would do that to you to go behind your back after everything that we've been through? I can't even look at you. Too much?
Just stick to the line I gave you.
Yeah. Okay.
Your whole team can see your upper thigh. Pour that smooth roast and aim that camera up high.
The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup.
I'm not feeling that good myself. Yes, sir. I'm not feeling that good myself today.
Can we just talk about that video for a minute? It said Britney Spears crazy. That was obviously Joe Cocker feeling all right. And I just have so many questions about that video. Maybe some of you can share. Like, what earth did we live on where Joe Cocker thought, yeah, wearing pastel pink and violet looks awesome. And those girls, the way they, I couldn't do their 60s dance if I tried. I love the 60s. It cracks me up. I don't understand any of it. It's right up there with everything we're going to talk about because I don't understand anything that happens on Twitter anymore. Twitter, Instagram, it's kind of mind-blowing. It's a nightmare. And I don't understand why we're not allowed to crack jokes anymore. Yeah. We're not allowed to crack jokes anymore. And I think that's a real problem. We saw that Cheetos commercial, right? With for the Super Bowl and the break. Cheetos is like rolling out some big thing. I don't know what it's going to be. It's going to be huge. But Budweiser, Coke, everybody else dropping out because they're too afraid to offend everybody because, you know, jokes might go wrong and then I'll get canceled. We live in a weird world. Let me explain to you what a joke is and what being an a-hole is. let's enter Jim Carrey's recent piece of art. Yes, Jim Carrey right there. So Jim Carrey made that art. It's of Melania Trump. And it's a little mean. It's a cartoon style illustration that features an up close and smiling Trump who's 50. And it says, oh, goodbye, worst first lady. I hope the settlement can finance your life in the shallow end. Thanks for nothing. That's not a joke. That's just mean and being a super big, you know what? I guess Jim Carrey's just really sad that he's not really relevant anymore because no one cares about anything he does and he's not in movies anymore. Maybe that's why he's so angry. But that ain't funny. That's just mean. Then there's Tim Matheson's tweet. He was on The West Wing. Some people might remember The West Wing. He's been on he plays a doctor, like an old failing doctor in a lot of shows right now, like Virgin River on Netflix. He did a tweet that said that's not the tweet I want to show. He did a tweet that said, what did it say? He said, so wonderful to have a first lady with class and heart and can speak English. See, that's racist and that's rude. You don't say things like that. Bette Midler tried it. Didn't go well for her. I don't know what you're thinking. Of course, later then he had that tweet of like, I'm so sorry. My joke was in poor taste. No, when you're an a-hole, that's not a joke. That's not a joke at all. You're just being mean. Jokes are funny, but we don't make jokes about how people speak English. That's just stinking rude. All right. Also, social media has become such a place that you can't even follow people you don't like anymore. I cannot believe that Candace Cameron Bure had to go on freaking Instagram to defend the fact that she follows Republican and Democrat politicians. Watch this.
I follow a very broad range of people politically within my work industry, and then personal friends and things I like. But a follow does not mean an endorsement. A follow does not mean I agree with everything they say and do. It just means I follow a broad range of people so that I have perspective.
Good Lord. Number one, so sad she had to do that to explain to tone-deaf people who were angry that she dare follow Trump or Obama or Biden. That is so stupid. Also, super stupid that your life is so shallow that you're like, oh, I'm losing followers and I need to like do a video to try to win them back and to explain and defend myself. It was dumb and stupid on all counts. Everybody needs to take a big fat chill pill and don't give a rat's what anyone else does. Does it affect you who Candace Cameron Bure follows? No. Do I care who you follow? No. Should you care who someone follows? No. You're going to crack a joke about it, go ahead. But don't be a dork. Like, that's the only word for you, dork. Now to the biggest Twitter fight of all time. It's Seth Rogen versus Ted Cruz. Dun, dun, dun. Oh, my God. This got wild over the weekend. Okay. So first, Ted Cruz puts out a tweet about how rejoining the Paris Climate Accord, you know, not a great thing. And Seth Rogen decides to go, F off, you fascist. A little angry there, Seth, which then Ted, he wants to fight back.
Charming, civil, educated response, Seth Rogen.
It didn't end there. No, it gets worse. It actually began, though, with Disney. Can you believe this? Literally, MGM Studios asked in a tweet, what was the first film you saw in theaters? Ted Cruz said it was Fantasia and that it scared him. And then Seth Rogen goes,
everyone who made that film would hate you.
What is wrong with people? Of course, Ted, he ain't one to sit down lightly. He's like,
they're all dead. So I think we're good. And Walt Disney was a Republican.
Oh, it gets worse. It gets worse. It gets worse. Check out the next couple of tweets. Okay. In that tweet, you know, Cruz goes, you're like someone with Tourette screaming, F you, F you. You're not clever. I like your movies. I'm sure you hate you and I enjoy them. That was actually kind of funny. Like, all right, Ted, I'll give you that one. That was funny. And then Seth Rogen, he comes out and goes, I'm offended because I have mild Tourette's and my family does too. Now Seth Rogen has Tourette's? What the fudge? We need to bring down the temperature. I don't know what has gone crazy with everybody, but they've all lost their freaking minds. I'm all for free speech. I guess you can say F off to anyone you want to say F off to, and I'm not going to tell you to stop. But the fact that it gets this far is just ridiculous and insane. That chill pill I was offering, everybody needs to get it. Because you want to know why?
This is getting sad.
Yeah, it's getting real sad. Speaking of Disney, because we brought them up, did you know that right now there is a petition going around to remove Trump from the Hall of Presidents? That's right. Disney recently put up a sign. You're seeing that sign there that says, hey, we're refurbishing the Hall of Presidents. This is only in Disney World. And people are signing a petition because they want Trump out. They want Trump gone. They want to erase his presidency and act like it never freaking happened. The petition states his anatomic figure should be removed immediately as he is a disgrace and a fascist traitor to America and should no longer disgrace Disney World, the Walt Disney Company, any longer. Number one, let me just inform you right now, if Trump was a fascist, he'd still be in power. It pays to have a dictionary. It really does. And see, that was a joke. And it was also funny and not offensive. And number two, you can't just erase history. I know that Americans have tried to erase history where we're saying like To Kill a Mockingbird is bad. Don't read it. Huck Finn is bad. Don't read it. Let's just pretend history didn't happen and we'll all be okay. But guess what? You can't erase history. Just because you take out an anatomic Donald Trump in the Hall of Presidents does not get rid of the president who literally brought peace to the Middle East. Something Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, none of them could do. Just want to, whoop, throwing that out there. Our last dumb tweet that we're going to look at. Everybody loves the show Bridgerton, right? It's on Netflix. It's kind of like softcore porn meets Pride and Prejudice meets Grey's Anatomy. That's my humorous analysis of it. But people are trying to become so Twitter famous and are just so butthurt about everything. Two episodes into Bridgerton, and so far I've spotted a single yellow line and a telecoms manhole cover. I didn't realize the 19th century Brits were such pioneers. Just shut up. Just shut up. You're so smart and so clever that you saw that we filmed a movie that's a period piece in 2020. You're right. I hope you're proud of yourself. No one thinks you're clever. No one thinks you're cute. No one thinks you're funny. And if you think that's mean, well, just remember, I don't care. All right. Bigfoot. Bigfoot is back, baby, in a big way. And an Oklahoma lawmaker has decided that he wants to make it legal and possible. There he is in all his bolo glory, because nothing says hip and cool like a freaking bolo. He wants to make it so that you can hunt Bigfoot, not to kill Bigfoot. I mean, we're not crazy. Just to capture him. I guess, you know, maybe he's watched a little bit too much Harry and the Hendersons, because remember this scene?
Let's keep it and get rich.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's what he's thinking. And now he's like, now he's all upset because he's getting trolled pretty hard because the people who deny Bigfoot lives thinks this is a big fat waste of time and just a money grab. And those who do believe in Bigfoot are like, this wasn't helping our cause. What's really not helping your cause is that we have a Republican lawmaker who thought for whatever reason, in an effort to make more money, it was a good idea to hunt a fictitious character. I really hope that soon the chupacabra hunting license pops up in Texas, maybe New Mexico. Chupacabra. Look it up.
Bigfoot? He's real?
He's not real. He's not real at all. All right. My last freak of the week is a repeat freak of the week. How many of you remember Yuri, the man who married his sex doll? You know that I'm the only American journalist who has interviewed Yuri. And in that interview, we learned that Marlo, his sex doll, is broken. It's broken. She's trying to get fixed. So he had to address that on his Instagram this weekend. And in his Instagram, he basically said that he's going to have multiple wives. Yeah. He's going to have multiple wives. And he's going to explore other opportunities. That if he had a sex doll that was a man that looked exactly like him, he would marry that sex doll just because he thinks it would be great to have sex with himself. And he's also, if you notice there, having relations with a chicken. If you watch the video, which I refuse to show you, he enjoys himself with the chicken, which immediately made me think of The Real Housewives.
Okay, we don't need any soap. Did you just put soap on him?
Yeah.
You did. You put soap on him?
I want to wash it. Why would you not put soap on it?
Did Yuri put soap on his chicken?
I don't know.
I don't know what's wrong with the world. And how does a man who married a sex doll make my freak of the week list like twice now? I don't know. If you haven't seen the Yuri interview, you can go to my YouTube page and watch it in its full 45-minute glory. Good Lord. My mind is constantly blown. Like, I have two children. Like, why did I bring children into this world? When you have sex with a sex doll and say that's you marry it and you're going to have, and then you also like marry a chicken, a freaking chicken, people, a freaking chicken. Can the world get any crazier? I don't know, but I'll keep you up to speed on what you need to know right now. That is my nightly newscast Monday through Thursday at 6:30 p.m. So be sure to come back to this channel to watch the news you need the way you want it, when you want it, how you want it, with, yes, a little bit of humor, because my God, I have a sense of humor and it's totally okay. And I'll make fun of people who, you know, marry sex dolls or Chrissy Teigen just because why not? And of course, the Michelle Mortensen Show every Monday and every Friday at 12 noon. You can watch right here for all the goods. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks for coming back after, you know, Sony kicked us off because we dared play the Fugees for 5 seconds. And we'll see you back here tonight at 6:30 for what you need to know. Have a good one and stay tuned. Much more to come. Time to get real.